It's what I can look at you with my hands. What can I tell?
Butterfly by Willis and Shante, who will be performing in concert at the Exchange Sunday, March the 25th, 2012 at 3 o'clock p.m. The Exchange is located at 114 West 5th Street, downtown Los Angeles. Welcome to the Qumran Report. May the peace and blessings of the life-giving creative spirit be upon you and upon your family. My name is Melvin Ishmael Johnson, and I'm in the studio with my two co-hosts, Tyrone Robinson and Earlene Anthony. This week, we'll be talking about healthful eating in the community with Zanab, the health genie Williams, and artist writer Tanya Bird. Right now, I'm on the line with Leonard Manzelli. He's a psychotherapist and have been a clinical social worker for the past 30 years. He's also worked in the California prison system. He's a playwright with the Rovi Theater Advanced Playwriting Program, and he has written a play called Cages, which is running right now at the Stella Adler Theater, 6773 Hollywood Boulevard, Los Angeles, California, 90028, located on the corner of Hollywood Boulevard and Highland. The play is running every Friday and Saturday at 8 o'clock and Sunday at 2 o'clock p.m. How you doing, Leonard?
I'm fine, thank you.
Okay, Leonard, can you tell us a little about Cages?
Well, Cages is a play that is written about some of the work that I did while I was contracting with the California Department of Corrections. And the play has to do with the administrative segregation unit at the prison where I worked. And the prison where I worked was basically one of the hubs in California for the mentally ill. So administrative segregation, if your listeners don't know, is basically jail inside a jail. When you're in prison and you get in trouble, you get sent to administrative segregation. Some prisons around the country call it solitary confinement. I just call it the hole. Anyway, bottom line here is you're in jail, inside a jail. So when the mentally ill go to jail inside a jail, the feds mandate that they receive treatment because they are deemed mentally ill. So they have to have treatment. So the California Department of Corrections found a way that they thought would serve to allow these people to have their treatment, and they built these cages about the size of a phone booth. So every Friday at about 2:15, I would go into a room with a very cold cement floor where there were seven cages bolted to the floor in a semicircle. And in each one of the cages was an inmate, and I would conduct a psychotherapy group. So the play basically is about the work I did with these men, many of the stories that I heard, and of course they've all been changed to protect, you know, the people's privacy, but I heard so many stories, and it affected me in such a way that I wanted to tell the story and let people see through my eyes for a moment about what it's like.
Mm-hmm. Now, you also, you're the co-producer of this play, of your play, Cages. Can you tell us some of the things you have learned by co-producing your own play?
Well, it's an interesting process. I was working on this for quite a while, and I found someone who decided that he wanted to back it. He felt it was a noble cause. Gary Ward is his name. And Gary said, you know, Leonard, I really want this to be done. And so he said, I just want to make it happen. So he basically put up the funds that we needed to do it. And I told him that I would make sure that everything was, I would bring in a production for him and make sure that everything was handled very well. Little did I know what I was getting into, because I really hadn't done this before on this end of production. I mean, I had a movie career years and years ago, but I really never could appreciate what production people go through. So I learned a lot. I think I got a crash course in play production 101. It was kind of like a baptism by fire, but I think it was very, very important, because not only did I co-produce it, but you know, I was there for every rehearsal and working with the actors and trying to help them understand the characters, if they had questions, understand the prison system, also, you know, making sure they had what they needed, making sure that everything was taken care of. So it was, I've learned a lot. I guess I can produce a play now.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you think this is the future of for playwrights, producing or co-producing their own plays?
Well, you know, I don't know if it's the future. I think that when someone wants to get something done and other people aren't understanding their dream or aren't understanding what they're trying to do, or if, you know, I mean, I actually approached several theaters around town, but all of these theaters have their agendas. They have their programs that they've decided they're going to do for the year. And then, you know, some people, when you're trying to do something that's different, kind of on the edge out there, sometimes it can be difficult to get people to understand what it is you're trying to do. So I think that when you start to produce, when you decide that you're going to take the bull by the horns and you're going to make this happen because you believe in it, and even if other people aren't quite seeing it the way you see it and understanding it the way you understand it. And I think this is true for anything. I think it's true for music or movies or play. Anytime we're trying to create something, I think that, you know, that you certainly can try to get other people to do it. But also, when you produce it yourself or co-produce it, you have more artistic control. And I think that that was really very, very important, because I found a very good director in John Lawrence Rivera. And having come in as a co-producer, it gave John and I a relationship that I think was really important. We worked very well together, and I'm sure we had our moments of maybe tension and not understanding each other in the beginning. But I think that we really did very well together. And visually, he understood this very carefully. And being a co-producer, I got to pick my director.
Oh,
and I got
great.
to make choices that I might not have been able to make otherwise.
Now, Leonard, you're also part of the Robies Advanced Playwriting Program, the theater company run by Ben Guillory's and Danny Glover's theater company. What is that like for you?
Well, you know, it was really a really terrific experience. I originally took the play. I was trying to find a place to develop the play and possibly have it produced, so I ended up in their playwrights program with a couple of really wonderful people. Ben, of course, heads the program, but the teachers were Aaron Henney and Dylan
Southern.
What, Southern?
Southern, yes.
Yeah, Southern, yeah. And Dylan was absolutely wonderful, and two dramaturges that were really, really helped me a lot in developing the play. I, having written for years and basically writing mostly for film, I kind of thought in a filmic kind of way. I would design scenes, and I mean, just to give you an example, when I did my first draft, it was 150 pages. I had 28 characters. And of course, Aaron and Dylan were trying to be nice and say, "Leonard, listen, this is theater. You see, actors don't come on for one scene." And I would go, "Oh, so from 28 characters and 7 cages, we're down to 5 cages and 8 characters." And it actually works really well. And of course, if we did the film, I'm sure a lot of those characters would come back. But theater was really interesting. I really learned how to write a play for stage, which is, in a way, liberating too, because you can use much more fantasy and you can do anything. Sky's the limit. But I learned a lot from that program, and even though it was very frustrating at times, I really owe them a lot for what they taught me.
Mm-hmm. Great program. Now, Leonard, I've seen the play twice, and it's a great play with a great cast. And I would like to get a question from Earlene and Tyrone. They also saw the play. First, here's Earlene, want to ask you a question, and then Tyrone.
Hi, okay. Leonard.
Hello.
How you doing?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
I'm good. I know you were with us when we did the first reading of Cages.
Yes.
And we've seen it evolve through quite a few transitions. And you had... more characters, let's say, and much more dialogue, and I'm sure a longer play. How did you decide who you were going to eliminate or cut down or, take out? How did you go through that process? Just give us a little brief information on that.
Well, it was very tough, because what happened was, is I had all of these stories of these men swimming in my head, and each man... And I think that's why, people come out and they really like these people because they're alive. And it's because they're real stories.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had these stories, and I didn't want to give up. I think that's why it took me so long to finish the script, actually, because I didn't want to give up these stories. And I'm going to tell you, there are many, many, many stories, wonderful, beautiful stories that make you laugh, make you cry, that never got into the... never got into the play.
Yeah.
But what it was, I had to kind of go, when you're writing a play, you're taking people on a journey, and at a certain point I had to find the pieces that made this journey work. This Dr. Thomas Morey, who's the leading man,
mm-hmm.
It was really about his journey. And so the stories that I really, which is the reason I wrote the script, I had to use these stories to help this journey through, to really make it work for the stage. Otherwise, it would have been just a series of vignettes. So sometimes what I did is I made it compilations. In other words, some of the stories I combined into one character.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So some of the men are telling the stories of several men.
Right.
But the stories are there. So that's kind of what happened over a period of time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Leonard, how about Tyrone?
Good evening, Leonard. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you, Tyrone?
So far, so good. When you first came and you started talking about how you were rehearsing, what, 6-7 days out of the week? Some really incredible...
6 days.
6 days out of the week, and even you didn't understand it, and I didn't understand it. But after after seeing the show, and after seeing all the characters come to life as they did... And I began to see why the necessity of the rehearsals, because all those characters were so dynamic and reminded me of a lot of people that I've come across. The fact that you had it staged at the Stella Adler, the darkness, the smoke machine, the fog machines, the rigidiness of the cages. They reminded me so much of my own personal experiences in the dungeons of Twin Towers, those dark and dank places. So I could totally identify. You did a very fine job of creating or recreating that type of experience. My question is, About the cages themselves, I've seen the actual cages. How did the design come about of the cages that you use?
Well, first of all, I have to give credit to John Lawrence Rivera and our wonderful set designer, Robert Seelander, because really they are, and also Adam Blumenthal, who was our lighting designer, and they really came up with these ideas. I had written a script, and when I first met with John Lawrence Rivera, he was very, very straight with me. He said, you know, Leonard, many writers come to me, and they have such a fixed idea in their heads about what they want that there's really no room for me. And what I do is I bring the theatricality to it. And I looked at John, and I said, you know, I understand. And what you have a very wonderful reputation, and I really want you to do that. So I really stayed out of his way. So all of those beautiful, you know, the fog machine and the starkness of the set and the cages, they were designed. Now, he would show them to me. He shared them because I certainly could have talked about things I didn't like, things I would like different, but I felt he was had such a visual feel for the story. I like to stay out of people's way when they're doing a great job. I just stood on the sidelines, and I thought he did just a marvelous job. About the cages now, what John felt, and we talked about it, and I felt for a long time, those cages are almost like characters in the play.
Exactly.
And they were very, very important. And so we couldn't use the actual cages, because if we did, you wouldn't see anybody.
That's
you know,
right.
The cages are. So what we wanted to do more is symbolic cages. And what we did is basically, if you look at the cages, there's pieces of mesh in front. So
right.
If you put them all together with your eye, you would kind of have one cage. And so that's what happened. They wanted to do this kind of this way of sculpting them in a way that we would have, you know, five cages, and if you combine them with your eye, it would kind of make one. So that's
right.
Really John's idea. And John, at the very beginning, you know, we talked, he thought the cages were incredibly important because we really didn't know if we were going to actually make them. We would use light. But and then I was very, very, very fortunate that my producer, Gary Ward, was able has access to a place where we could actually build the cages, and his very artistic people who worked for him created the cages.
Those are very pivotal parts of the play, very necessities, very, very, very good. Thank you, Leonard.
Yes. Okay. You're welcome.
Okay, Leonard, for those who would like to get tickets, what is the contact information?
You know, they can go to, first of all, the website is cagestheplay.com.
Okay, cagestheplay.com.
Yeah, all together, cagestheplay.com. Or they can go on, and right there, you can go on cagestheplay.com, right on the homepage. There's a place where you click on to buy tickets. Or you can go right to paper, brown paper tickets. And you just plug in cages in Los Angeles, and it'll come up, and you can order tickets right there.
Okay, thank you, Leonard. We wish you continued success with the Run of Cages that ends Sunday, April the 1st, 2012.
Thank you very much.
All right.
Good night, Leonard. Bye.
Now, I'm delighted to have in the studio with us tonight Tanya Byrd, writer-artist, and Zainab the Health Genie Williams. Tanya and Zainab, welcome to the Qumran Report.
Thank you.
Thank
Glad
you.
Glad to be here.
Now, when I was growing up, two books that had the most influence on me in terms of healthful eating was Back to Eatin' by Jethro Klaus and How to Eat to Live by the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. Now, both books stress eating right according to the revealed scripture, which is now eating right according to the revealed scripture to the Torah is known as kosher, and eating right according to the Quran is known as halaya. Now, lately, a new term has come into existence as an extension of vegetarianism. That term is vegan. And I want to talk about that with our guests, but first, let's start with this. Can you tell us about the whole health genie concept? I'll turn it over to you.
Okay, Again, I'm happy to be here. I appreciate this opportunity to speak to people about health and wellness. I would like to suggest that if people are sincerely interested in making changes, grab a piece of paper and a pencil, an iPad, or whatever. I'm going to throw out some things that you might want to remember, so it'd be easier to jot them down. But to answer your question, the health genie, as a health genie, I really am the DNA health genie. And I say the DNA health genie because, as we may remember from high school biology or whatever, DNA is at the cellular level who we really are, the very essence of who we are genetically. And healing really is from the genetic all the way out, the microcosm all the way to the macrocosm. And so then the things that I talk about as the health genie will help you heal yourself, heal your family, your community, ultimately the whole larger picture. So I really do strive to be the health genie, bringing cure and big change.
Now, why do you recommend a plant-based diet?
Well, the plant-based diet is really fundamentally everybody's basic diet. If you think about it, where do the animals get their protein from? Where do they get their nutrition? Whether it's a cow, a hippopotamus, a mouse, a giraffe, most animals, it comes down to the plant. You know, even the biggest animal, the giraffe, is very tall. It eats the leaves from the tree. The hippopotamus nibbles on grass, and so do cows. So it's really not a matter of, you know, if you don't eat meat, then you won't be healthy and strong. That's a fallacy. Mm-hmm. But plants, they don't have as much resistance in our body. When you eat meat, your cow or pig or whatever, it can stay in your body 48, 72 hours at 98.6 degrees, just sitting there. And you wonder, why am I not feeling so well? Why am I so sluggish? Because it takes such a long time for your body to break down meat. Mm. But plants, your body, you know, plants are not, if you just think about it, a plant is not nearly as tough as a steak. Your body can break it down much quicker, and it can, your body can then absorb the nutrients from it and then begin to process them and utilize them. That's why we eat, so that our body can be replenished of the nutrients that it requires.
Okay, explain the difference, or talk a little about vegetarians and vegan, those two terms. Can you talk a little about
Certainly.
That?
Certainly. Well, vegetarian has come a long way. A lot of people classify themselves as vegetarian, but a vegetarian really is someone who does not consume any animal. An animal, for some, that it seems pretty obvious, we know what animals are, but you have people who eat chicken and fish and consider themselves vegetarian, who eat eggs and milk and consider themselves vegetarian. But a vegetarian is someone who does not eat an animal. An animal is anything that has a mama. Or it has a face. Eggs don't have faces, but they do have mamas. So if you think of it that way, then it's pretty easy to discern what is a vegetarian and what is not. Mm-hmm. Be it far from me to say if somebody wants to call themselves whatever they call themselves and eat whatever they want to eat, but realistically, a vegetarian is the person who does not eat anything with a mama.
Mm-hmm. And the vegan?
A vegan is, or vegan, is someone who does not eat anything that has a mama, or eggs, or dairy. Okay, so no cheese, no ice cream, no eggs, scrambled or otherwise, you know. That would classify you as a vegan.
Mm-hmm.
Now, some people don't eat sugar when they consider that part of being a vegan. That's not necessarily part of being a vegan. You just don't eat sugar. Not that sugar is good for you, because it's not, it's a drug, but just vegan alone, under the standard ideology, is someone who does not eat anything with a mother, eggs or dairy.
Mm-hmm. Now, when I was doing some research for this, I saw something about Pythagoras, who did the Pythagorean theorem way back, and they said something about he might have been the one that laid the theory down for this type of thought, because he believed in the transmigration of the soul, and he was pushing that when people eat animals, they might be another human being who would move from one life to the other. Mm-hmm. But if you want to comment on that, but I also want you to talk a little about the organic and then the certified organic, the difference between.
It's interesting that, just real quickly about Pythagoras, oddly enough, our ancestors back in the continent of Africa practice vegetarianism and mm-hmm. veganism. If you notice, a lot of people of color have difficulty even processing lactose, dairy, which kind of stands to reason that maybe it's not for our bodies. You know what I mean? So it should not be a surprise that our ancestors may not have consumed dairy or eggs from the chicken, in which case that would make them vegan. Unfortunately, history has a unique way of recoloring itself and redistributing who the actual founders are, but I guess that's another radio show. At any rate, you talked about organic and certified organic. Well, organic basically means that the produce is not raised with, it's not grown with pesticides or fertilizers or anything like that. It's pretty much pure. And there are natural ways to keep bugs from eating the plant that won't cause ailments to you later. Monsanto is a pesticide company that's spraying our produce with unimaginable things that have severe repercussions, but yet and still, it's still, you know, Monsanto is still allowed to go out and do that. Certified organic is regulated by the USDA, and they have certain guidelines that regulate how the food is produced and cared for and the crops and such. You can have an organic garden without it being certified, simply by a little plot of land and you throw some seeds in it. If you grow it without fertilizer, you can use compost, which is made from food scraps, leaves, you know, natural things. That will basically, you're just putting the nutrients back in the soil. That's the idea. And so then if you use compost, that will accomplish the same thing. You don't have to use animal feces or anything like that. And then pesticides, neem oil is a common anti-insect repellent type thing that you can put on your plants that's natural, and you can rinse it off very easily, and it has no harmful effect on the human body. And so then you're able to raise your crops in a simple manner, and they be healthy and nutritious and not kill you. So that would be organic, certified organic.
Let me ask you this about for the people that like to use milk, like milk on cereals and all like that. Because I know Jethro Klaus, he used to talk about substituting using soybean milk. Is that a suitable substitute?
It depends on your body. My children drink soy milk. My children are vegan. I'm not vegan per se, but my children, I've raised all five of them to be vegan. They use almond milk. They use soy milk. There is rice milk also available. They're not big fans of rice milk. But depending,
Rice milk.
The consistency is a little bit thinner, but it's tasty, you know, and it doesn't give you, you know, how you wake up with all that in your throat in the morning. That doesn't occur because there's no dairy, you know.
And it has a shelf life. You can don't have to refrigerate it.
Yes, if as long as it's vacuum packed.
Yes. Okay, let's take a break for our community calendar, and then we'll come back and have a roundtable discussion for our subject, healthful eating in the community.
This is our community calendar for the month of March. Sunday, March the 26th at 3 p.m., Roma Stage Cool Run presents Willis and Shantae in a special musical performance, actually a mini concert. They'll also be doing a dramatic reading of an original short stage play that they wrote especially for this event. Also, there will be performances of open mic. The location of this event is The Exchange, 114 West 5th Street, Los Angeles. This is a free event and all are invited to attend. For more information on this event, please call 323-850-4436. Tuesday, March the 27th at 9:30 a.m., Drama Stage Coon Run will be on the campus of USC during a performance of Nailheads for the Department of American Studies and Ethnicity. If you would like to attend, just give us a call at 323-850-4436. And on the calendar, we ask you to save the date. April the 29th marks the 20th anniversary of the 1992 Los Angeles Rebellion. You're cordially invited to attend a unity rally and a block party. The keynote speaker will be Maxine Waters, and there will be more information coming up in the month of April. And if you have a community event that you would like announced on our show, just send the information to dramastage1@yahoo.com, attention Earlene Anthony. And once again, our call-in number for the show is 800-893-9562. Now, back to our host.
Thank you, Earlene Anthony. Now, we're back with our guests, Tanya Bird and Zenab, the health genie Williams. I want to pick up on something that Tyrone had mentioned a little earlier about the shelf life of milk. Because, you know, I use a non-dairy milk. Mm-hmm. And the thing that bothers me about it is after 2 or 3 days is something else. Mm-hmm. I have to throw it away. Mm-hmm. What can we do about that? What kind of milk can we? What's the best kind that you
recommend?
I can use for cereal, stuff like that, okay. Just to drink.
Okay. Well, one of the things I was saying off the air is that human beings are one of the only species that continue to consume milk past the age of maturity. Milk is really designed for infants, whether it's an infant cow or an infant pig or an infant human. It's really designed for infants because you don't have the mechanisms in your mouth, the teeth and the chewing and all that to be able to consume the nutrients the way that adults do. So you drink the milk from the mother, which is really packed full of nutrients and all the things that a body needs to grow into a mature form. Now, a calf, the cow milk is designed for, right? A calf will drink the milk and grow into a full-size cow. Okay, until it's able to chew the hay and all that. Okay, well, humans, once we get to the age where we can chew our food, we really don't need milk. Now, because we are in love with the food cereal, then mm-hmm. we have to have something, right? Generally, if you have soy milk, rice milk, almond milk, the shelf life is about a week. And anything past that, you really don't want it because that means it's loaded down with preservatives, and surprisingly enough, even though you consume preservatives, they don't stop preserving just because you drank them or ate them. Mm-hmm. So then they're going to continue to preserve you. So where your cells would normally die off and your body would naturally kick them out and then the new ones would fill their place, it's not going to do that because of the preservatives. Mm-hmm. So you really should be happy that the milk is deteriorating after a certain amount of time and just toss it out. I know it hurts you, breaks your heart when you feel like you're throwing your money away, but really it is the best thing for you.
Okay. Yeah. Hey, we're in a round table discussion, so anybody, Tyrone, Tanya, Earlene?
I just wanted to ask, do all vegans eat the same kind of diet? Or
absolutely
not.
Yes, it can vary culturally. It can vary by individual preference. You know, some vegans eat the exact same thing every day, oatmeal for breakfast, for example, and you know, fruit at lunch and whatever. My family's diet is a bit different. You know, I'm a vegetarian caterer and I specialize in healthy soul food. And so my kids eat something like mock chicken and mock beef and, you know, things like that so that they, when they go out amongst their peers, they don't feel like they're missing out on anything. Mm-hmm. They can still grub just right. like everybody else.
That's good.
So it does vary amongst households.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, can you still be healthy without organic vegetables and fruits? Can you talk about that a little bit?
Certainly. When I first became a vegetarian about 20 years ago, I decided that if I couldn't be a vegetarian out of the regular grocery store, I wasn't going to do it. And the reason why is because these specialty stores will kill your pocket.
Yes.
You know, and a lot of people have issue with that. It can be very expensive if you're shopping at, you know, some of these major natural food chains. It'll just drain your pocket. Yes, you can. You can find organic food in the grocery store, but it's usually overpriced and the selection is minimal. What I would recommend is some of the local organic food co-ops. One that I'd like to mention is called Local Harvest. You can find it at www.localharvest.org. And it's a co-op. So you put your money in with other people and you can get a box of fresh produce grown organically for a reasonable amount of money. And it's a far better value than what you would find in a grocery store. Mm-hmm. But yes, you can find it in a grocery store. It doesn't have to be organic to be healthy. You just have to choose, pretty carefully, find some good quality produce and, you know.
Where are the co-ops located?
You can find them, you can look up under Bing.com, put in organic co-op, mm-hmm. and some should pop up. They're all over Southern California. One of my good friends and I intend to organize one with perhaps the Black Farmers of Southern California.
Oh, that'd be great.
Yeah.
You know, I was thinking today about how America was mm-hmm. prior to the Industrial Revolution, mm-hmm. before food became processed and canned and bottled and jarred, mm-hmm. when people grew things in fields and things. Now you go to the 99 cent store and you find, what is it, not iceberg lettuce, but that romaine lettuce mm-hmm. in packages. Mm-hmm. And it's like grown to fit inside of the packages, okay? So it's like, you know, what is it, Soylent Green all over again? Or is this the beginning of such? My thing is, in the vegan diet, there's certain meat things that you can only find, like B12 vitamins in, mm-hmm. That you can't find in vegetables. Mm-hmm. What do you guys do about that?
There's synthetic B12.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Can you elaborate a little bit, maybe?
Actually, I only stick to what I know,
uh-huh.
And that I'm not as familiar with, mm-hmm. but I do know that it's more and more common mm-hmm. To find B12. In order for it to be vegan, it has to be synthetic B12 because plants, you can't,
right.
like you said, you can't get B12 from plants.
Right. Okay. Mm-hmm. Great.
Now, if you eat organic, do you still need to use supplements? A lot of people use.
Yes, I would definitely say yes. The issue is not so much whether it's organic or not, but the soil that it's grown in. Mm-hmm. And after time and time of growing fruits and vegetables in the soil, it becomes depleted. Mm-hmm. You know, especially if it's organic, it has to be replenished, you know, some way. But just the massive volume amount of food that's produced around, it's just, the quality is not the same. You spoke mm-hmm. about early America. Right. We don't have that kind of soil going on anymore. You kind of have to supplement. And supplementation is really, really very necessary. There's a lot of great supplements out there. I happen to represent a company that makes customized supplements based on your DNA that will address directly your specific genetic issues that your
mm-hmm.
body has.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, what are a few things that a person can do to live a healthier lifestyle? Let's talk about that for a while.
Okay. Actually, I have about 10 really quick and easy things. I like to focus on little things that people can do uh-huh. because change can be overwhelming sometimes, you know, and people think, oh, I'm not going to do it. It's just too much. But there's so many little things that we can do, minor changes that we can make in our lives on a daily basis. Something as simple as basically getting a piece of paper and making a list of the change that you want to see in your life. That's the basic thing. How can you achieve something if you don't have a map? You've got to have a plan.
Mm-hmm.
And then once you get that plan, you need to make sure that your environment is conducive to your success. So say, for example, a person listens to this broadcast and they say, hey, you know what? I think I want to be a vegetarian. Okay, great. But when you get ready to snack tomorrow or in the next hour or two, the only thing you're going to have is some beef jerky or, you know, something that's totally contrary to what you just stated your goal to be.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that I do is I visit people who have that goal and I help them frame their environment, their home, so that they can be successful. And we come up with a plan so that they know, okay, I know that tomorrow at 3:00, I'm going to be hungry. So you plan today. What am I going to do tomorrow at 3:00 when I'm hungry? What am I going to grab? So you need to have your success, your environment conducive to the success that you desire.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to have a plan. And then with that plan, you form your environment so that you can be successful. If mm-hmm. you choose to fall off after that, at least it wasn't because you didn't plan ahead, okay? Next, revamp your kitchen. Make a list of snacks that you enjoy eating. So if you normally would be eating Skittles, as a snack food. Get yourself some raisins, some caramel pieces, some peanuts, some snacks that you can put together in, say, a trail mix. Put in some Ziploc bags. Put in the refrigerator on the countertop or wherever you keep your snacks so that when you get hungry, you can stay true to what your goals are. Take the meat out of your kitchen and give it away, throw it away, whatever it is you need to do. But get it out of your kitchen, because what are you going to eat when you're hungry? If you don't plan ahead, you're planning to fail, you know? Next would be to figure out, where do you eat? If when you're hungry and you're out on the go, where do you eat? And then figure out what you can eat in those restaurants that won't compromise your goals. So say, for example, you know that there's a Pollo Loco who has a bean and cheese burrito. There's no meat in that. It's really good and it's affordable. If you ask them, I mean, I usually ask them to throw in some cilantro and onion because I love that, right? And it makes it taste that much better. For $1.50, you're eating pretty good, right? Many of the local eateries now have modified their menu because they understand that people have a more health conscious perspective and they want to see some healthier foods. Choose a salad that you can eat and ask them to take the meat out of it. You know, something small that people can do. If you're used to eating meat 7 days a week, take meat out of your diet and substitute it with beans or peanuts or something else for your protein 3 days out of the week. That's not a lot to ask. You still got four more to eat on whatever it was you're eating before, but it's a gradual process. Some people are successful doing cold turkey. I was one of them. I decided after I read about meat and the effects it has on your body, I was done. I didn't want no more. For those people who are interested in that statement I just said, RAVE, the RAVE diet. If you Google it, Bing it, whatever, the RAVE diet, RAVE. RAVE diet. If you, they have a video out that speaks specifically about the many, many ailments that are directly related to meat consumption. So anyway, 3 to 4 days out of the week, choose to not eat meat on those days. Have your plan in advance so you can be successful. Next, I would suggest that you commit to water. Many people do not drink water. They mistake dehydration for hunger pains. Consume water. A great water to consume is alkaline water. There's many brands out there now. It used to just be Kagan, but now there's several other people who can modify the water so that it's alkaline. Make sure you consume sufficient amounts of water every day. Breathe. Mm-hmm. People underestimate the impact of breathing.
Yeah. What's the difference between, before you continue, what's the difference between alkaline water and just regular water they have out there?
Well, regular water, as we might remember from school, is supposed to be with a pH balance of 7, meaning that it's neutral. Ours is hardly that. But alkaline water is, I believe it's 9.0 or somewhere in that range. The effect of that is it's said that disease cannot maintain in an alkaline environment. So if you consume alkaline water, you bring your pH balance more and more to a base level, and then therefore you'll have less opportunity for a disease to grow. That's the idea.
Okay. And what else?
So I was talking about breathing. You know, people underestimate the impact of breathing. You can go maybe 30 days without eating, maybe a week without water, but you can't go a day without breathing. You have to have air and oxygen. Yes. And so it's a great method for reducing stress and anxiety. If you just a few deep breaths, and it will really bring you back into focus, bring you back to being centered. It's really, really important because stress is killing us. And if we, until we learn sufficient ways to manage that stress, we're really going to be at a disadvantage. So take advantage of breathing. When people are getting on your nerves, when people are running up your, you know, your blood pressure and all these things, just stop and breathe. Mm-hmm. Inhale, exhale, deep breaths. A lot of times we get old cell air in the bottom of our lungs. When you breathe deeply and you know, all the way till your lungs are full and exhale slowly and practice that, then you get a opportunity to recycle some of that stale oxygen down there. And it really, really makes you feel better.
Okay.
And it really brings down, you know, people with issues of blood pressure was rampant in our community. It really is a great way for managing that stress. Also, exercise. And a lot of times we don't want to exercise. Exercise is something as simple as taking the stairs instead of the elevator. You know, a lot of times our schedules are so busy. I know even me, you know, I get my jog in, grabbing my keys and running out to the car. but something as simple as taking the stairs, you know, and on the days when I'm super lazy, I say, okay, I'll take the stairs down. Mm-hmm. I'll take the elevator up and stairs down. But whatever it is, just move. To get in the habit of moving, desire moving. Mm-hmm. A really phenomenal physical trainer is named Rufus Fuller. He's in Long Beach. You can reach Rufus at 562-787-8639. Mm-hmm. You can also reach him at RufusFuller@gmail.com. Rufus is amazing. He works exactly with what you need to have done.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so that would be exercise. Just to finish up really quickly, focus on being positive. A lot of us underestimate that. That's really important. I was in a major, major car accident about 14, 15 years ago. I had a fractured neck. I broke my neck and I broke my foot. Mm. And I was up and moving around and, shoot, I had a baby the next year. But it was just a matter of staying positive and staying focused on healing and being grateful and just rejoicing in life that really expedited my recovery. Mm-hmm. You have to... really focus on positivity. You can always find something to be upset about and dismal, but it's really important to stay positive. Also, be honest with yourself and focus on the good things about your life and how you can make those things better. Be focused. Smile. Many people underestimate what it takes to smile. It's so much easier to smile. Life is easier and light when you smile. Take time to slow down your life. In America, everything is so hustle and bustle, especially in LA. You're zooming, zooming. You got iPads and Blackberries and everything else zooming at you all the time. Just slow it down. Take some walks. Mm-hmm. See the sunset and go to the beach and enjoy some of the things that are around you that are free and simple. Mm-hmm. And if you can do that, it'll definitely bring down your stress. Plan your moves. And move in your plan. Try to avoid distractions that are taking you outside of what you really want to do in order to be successful. Be flexible. You have to figure out when to modify your plan. Be willing to reinvent yourself. And then number 10, most important, be grateful.
Be grateful. Okay.
Thank you so much for having me.
Okay. Look, for those who want to get in touch with you, what's your contact information?
I can always be reached at area code 562-256-5077. You can email me at thehealthgenie@hotmail.com. I'm always available by email. And you can visit my website. I spoke about supplements earlier. You can reach me at thehealthgenie.mygenewise, GeneWize.com.
Okay, thank you, Tanya. Thank you, Zanab, the Health Genie Williams. And thank you very much.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Our last section for tonight is from the voices from the ether portion of the show.
If it's Monday night, about 15 minutes to 9, then you're listening to Voices from the Ether.
Every night you're
playing in the background is a good friend of mine, a singer, Roger Karn, singing Bye Bye, the spinoff of the old Henry Mancini 60s tune, Peter Gunn. Roger is celebrating 5 years performing at the Far Bar this Thursday, March the 22nd, 2012, from 7 p.m. until 10 p.m. The Far Bar is located at 347 East 1st Street, Little Tokyo, in Los Angeles, California. On the phone with us tonight is Roger Karns. Evening, Roger.
Good evening.
Ah.
How are you?
I'm so glad to have you on the radio tonight. How are you, Roger?
I'm fine, thanks. How are you?
Good, good. Roger, can you tell our listening audience what they can expect to see and hear at the Far Bar performance this week?
Sure. We've got a five-piece on Thursday. I'm a singer, and we have a Gary Fukushima on keyboards, electric piano, rather, and Scott Jefferson on tenor sax, Emilio Terranova on bass, and Jens Kouros on drums. We do a mix of Great American Songbook, some Latin American stuff, ballads, obviously, swing, and It's very song-driven. I mean, they're great jazz musicians, and there's a jazz feel to everything, but it's very accessible. It's not opaque or difficult to access. I'm a great lover of melody and good lyrics, and that's what dominates my music. And the guys, the musicians seem to like it, and the people who come to Farbar really seem to be into it. So it's very nice to be celebrating our fifth anniversary now.
Very good, very good. Roger, where can your music be purchased?
Amazon, iTunes, CD Baby. If you Google my name, there are various sites come up, but the major ones certainly have it, and a lot of other online retailers too.
Okay, I'm sure that our audience can pick up a bit of an accent, and it's not Irish; it is Scottish. Is that correct?
Yes.
And
a little bit muted, but yes, it is. I grew up in Edinburgh.
Edinburgh, okay. Yeah. And you do have a website, and that is www.roger, and the tricky part is the last name, CAIRNS.com, right?
That's it, yeah.
That's it. And hopefully you can one day be part of one of our theater experiences and possibly get you in the studio to do an interview here and maybe do a performance as well. What do you think, Roger?
Be wonderful. I'd love to.
Very good. Very good, Roger. Hopefully I'll be in attendance this Thursday, and we'll be seeing you then. I'd like to
Great.
Thank you for joining us in the ether tonight, okay?
Not at all. Look forward to it. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Roger. All right. Okay, in studio tonight, I have another very close friend, new friend. Her name is Miss Tonya Bird, and she was here, just very recently, last month or
yes.
earlier this month. And she's back tonight, and the last time she visited us, she shared some inner city experiences, and I believe she has a few fresh insights to share with us tonight. Moody love memories.
My moody love memories. You got what it takes. Let's do the twist. After a hard day's night, everything's gonna be all right. Sunshine and blue skies. I was fighting over my guy. Ain't no mountain high enough. Even if we did get dirty and gritty, I'm going to Kansas City. They got some cute boys there, and I'm going to get me one. We only just begun. In the summer, we was having hot fun. We went to the psychedelic shack, and we saw Jimmy Mack. We asked, when was he coming back? And he said he was waiting for the big payback. Wow, war, what is it good for? It's your thing. Do what you got to do. I'm no better, neither are you. We are the same, whatever we do. Different strokes for different folks. Say it loud, I'm black and I'm proud. I'm so proud of being loved by you. Now I'm wondering who's loving you. I only meant to wet my feet, and I want to rock with you all night, like Gladys Knight in Georgia on that midnight train. Oh, I wish it would rain while I'm grooving in the grass and while I'm grazing in the grass and grooving on a Sunday afternoon. Sometimes it's a ball of confusion, taking me to paradise with fuel-injected passion. Can't get enough of your love, baby. Wake up, everybody. No more sleeping in bed. No more backward thinking. Time for thinking ahead. Ain't no thinner lines than the ones between love and hate. People make the world go around. Trash man didn't get my trash today. Why? Because they want my pay? What's going on? Thank you.
Thank you, Tonya. Voices from the Ether is the open mic portion of the Qumran Report. If you are a poet, musician, comedian, or eclectic enunciator, and you would like to visit our virtual stage, send an email to itsshowtime@dramastage-qumran.org. That's itsshowtime@dramastage-qumran.org. Tonya, I'm sorry. Yes. What was the inspiration for that piece, since we have a few moments to chat here?
Well, actually, I am a native of California, and I remember laying under the peach tree in Compton, listening to all these songs, and Mother saying, "Why are you listening to that music?" And, you know, they always wanted us to get our school lessons. Mm-hmm. Well, I was pretty smart in school, but I also remember these songs. And I am very good. I remember all of these songs very well, almost word for word, probably like a lot of us here in Los mm-hmm. Angeles. Mm-hmm. And I decided to put them down on paper because in a poetry move, sometimes the music is what really makes the poetry and vice versa. Mm-hmm. Music and poetry and music go hand in hand. So I just thought that I would just pull all that together, and I'm sure that I could even pull more. And I'm sure that even some of the people out here that heard this tonight can think of some of their own rhymes that they could put together from some of that good music that we grew up listening to.
Yes.
That was my inspiration.
Okay. And I'm curious. I grew up in Compton too. I knew apricot trees, I knew plum trees, but I didn't know any peach trees.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. Before I turn it over to our host, I want to put the word out that Drama Stage is looking for visual artists, painters, sculptors, craftspeople, photographers, etc., 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 to display their work and wares at the Exchange as part of the upcoming Downtown Art Walk Thursday, April the 12th. The exhibit will be open to the public from 1 p.m. until 10 p.m. the day of the art walk. Oops. Anyway, if you want to participate, please send an email to ezbydesign@yahoo.com. It reads just like it spells, ezbydesign@yahoo.com. Space will be limited, so get your responses in as soon as you can. That brings us to an end to tonight's visit to the ether. Now back to our host, Melvin Ishmael Johnson.
Hey, thank you, Tyrone. Now, I would like to extend a special thanks to our in-studio guests, Tonya Bird and Zanab the Health Jeannie Williams. On the line with playwright Leonard Manzelli and musician Roger Kearns, my co-hosts Tyrone Robinson and Earlene Anthony, and a special thanks to Jeremy, Sonia, and the Skid Row Studios.
Thank you.
Now, you can check out our past shows of the Qumran Reports on iTunes, Facebook, Twitter, skidrow.la, or www.dramastage-qumran.org. Thank you for tuning in to the Qumran Report. And I leave you with a song that opens the show, Butterfly by Willis and Shante.
All right.